27, this is 27, this is 48, this is 44.
44.
It was a cold night, a wicked evening, and I was trying to get a lift. The decorations of the building lights like a swollen landing strip. And then conceiving, I found some leaves that I wanted, pressed and tried. The hands wouldn't let me work that night. I decided not to try. I went to Bright Street, I went in bare feet, I went to Barron's, shoes and ties. There were streamers up, they won't let you browse. Hence, I lied.
77 is 27, is 48, is 44. 77 is 27, is 48, is 44.
44.
The wooden ceilings, the broken windows, the curtains drawn and torn. These old motels like sunken ships still crashing on the shore. There's a bird in the deep footprint in the snow outside the door. I'd feed her if the shoe'd been mine. At Barron's I was declined. So I'm holed up for the winter in this broken down motel. I wrote to Cat to catch her up. Yes, I wrote, I'm well. There's a song of the fair traveller who rambles free and wide. I'm just like that, I wrote to Cat. Hence, I lied.
77 is 27, is 48, is 44. 77 is 27, is 48, is 44.
44. I missed it again. Oh, my Lord. I missed it again. I'm thoroughly, absolutely, and completely unprepared. I have no excuse. I have explanations, things I can say in my own defense. But I was in a great rush today, a great rush to do this and that and get everything done and right and ready. And because I was going to get home late this evening without being able to prepare anything, I went out for a long walk in the woods, went to the faraway river, and I recorded everything with a little camera. Then I came home and I put it in the video processor, the blender machine, that takes the video and allows you to put titles and get rid of all the extra bits where you're just spinning around in circles. So I cut away some things and put in some titles, and then I went to export this fairly large file, this fairly long excursion. And when I got home this evening at 8:53 or whatever it was, just a few minutes ago, it was still building itself, still making this amazingly large file. So this thing, this object that I tried to create, that I could stick in right now to start everything up so I could actually prepare, which doesn't mean anything except that I needed to collect my wits, have some tea. You can't even see this, but I lost the foam cover for the microphone, so I have to use one of my gloves. Good thing it doesn't have the fingertips. I actually used the original. It's the prototype. I thought I would use this. So I had this for a while. Then I thought, no. Not with fingers. No one wants to see fingers near mouths unless someone's eating. It's unpleasant to have a hand just near the mouth.
constantly. It's about to grab, pull some of the teeth out. So, we do have a few things. Not prepared, really. I have some videos I thought would be exciting. We'll start with this as I continue to collect myself. I'm not wearing any pants, is what I mean. Not a pair of pants on me. Completely dressed from the waist up, and I have one sock on. But that's just the exclamation point to one's own nakedness. So, let's play a few things here while I collect myself, become pantsed, and then we'll continue on. And Ryan, if you're out there, maybe we'll do the TV thing a little early tonight, as I don't have my stupendous, life-saving, show-saving video to put up at the front end. So we'll talk soon, and I'll be back just after this moment, as soon as I can get my lovely pair of pants on. And of course, they're not here. I don't know where they are. Suppose I could continue like this. You'd never know. But I do occasionally stand. We don't want to have me occasionally stand in this state. Back in a moment.
There's in the forest, in the forest stop be, I ought to climb down.
Well, I still don't have pants on, but that video did not seem to be working. What's wrong with everything? We'll do something much more exciting. A much more exciting video that perfectly suits what I'm about to do, which is don a pair of trousers. Why it suits it, because while you're watching it, you won't have any recollection of what I'm saying right now. It's like a memory charm. So here it is. It's Jeb Corliss, grinding the crack. Grinding the crack. It's an unfortunate title, I think. But it's very exciting, very surprising. What do we call it? Sort of at the edge of sports excitement. This is something I could never do. In another life, Jeb Corliss would have been member of a polar expedition or climbed Everest. But in this life, where everything has been fairly well discovered and explored, he's left to do this, put on this wild wingsuit and fly 120 miles an hour down, and then just barely, almost touching the earth. It's quite beautiful and frightening. So here it is, showing sleeves, wearing the pants.
Because I'm a baby, baby. Extremely close on that one.
La 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 sail. I don't know, I think everyone wonders about those balloons, the red and the blue balloon. It's the first time I've ever been worried about balloons as an obstacle. Something someone might crash into and might affect them. Those balloons. What would happen? It's going 120, 50 miles an hour. And crash into a balloon. Maybe it's like a rock. Or the little string that's holding it. Plenty of places for worry there, Jeb Corliss. I don't know if what he does is strictly legal. I don't know. I know that his wingsuit companies must have some authority to allow these stunt flyers to do different flights in different places, but Jeb Corliss has divvied off things like the Empire State Building and flown through streets. I know he has a few of his former partners have died doing these wingsuit jumps. So it's very exciting. And then one worries about it and thinks it's too extreme, like leaping out of an airplane without a parachute and then flying along, hoping you can find one along the way. Just too dangerous. A little too dangerous. So what are we going to do this evening? We'll play a few of these videos. We'll talk to Ryan Reese, Scorpio Reese. Ryan. Talk about the new television shows. See where we're at. We're another level in, another level deep into these television seasons. New episodes of Pan Am. I forget the rest. Terra Nova. Now I forget the rest. So we'll see what our television expert thinks. Before that, why don't we play this? It's a fellow. His name is Rorschach. On the Ron and Fez show. And I haven't listened to the Ron and Fez show in a while, unfortunately. So I don't know if he's still calls in, I assume so. But he posts videos on YouTube, and whenever I see them, I'll watch them, because they're perfectly, pardon me, sort of cough button. See, if I had time to prepare, I would have been able to cough for a long time. 15-20 minutes, that's what I need to clear the Gulliver, as they call it. The Gulliver, clear the Gulliver. So it's, and so Rorschach does these videos on YouTube, and they're exactly what videos on YouTube should be, I think. They're very entertaining, they're funny, and they're very particular and peculiar to him, as a person. They represent him. Whereas I think a lot of other videos, especially the ones that have a lot of people watching, and I mean the ones where people are just sitting and talking like I am right now, the personality of the person who's delivering the video is somewhat manufactured. They speak very rapidly, or they bounce around with a jump cut video thing. And they can be entertaining, but they don't seem very real. But Rorschach manages to combine the best of all these things. Entertainment, and still it's him talking. Often he'll tell a story from his life, a little bit of a strange thing that he's wondering, something he's upset about, they changed the menu at Wendy's. That's the kind of thing I want to hear about. What upsets other people, what's important to them, what moves them. And Rorschach is completely willing and interested to share those things. So here's a bit, a recent video of his called My Brain is a Fruit. Rorschach. And you can find him on YouTube. I think his channel is Rorschach 7, and it's spelled Rorschach, number 7. That could be wrong. Close to that, but I'll put a link when I post all this later on Radio Ghost. So it is what I think the very model of a modern major video.
Listen, I have always used an analogy for my brain as a fruit ripening. And by the way, that's not the only thing that NBC has ripped off from me. Parks and Recreation stole a joke that I wrote where I said to someone, well, it looks here like your medical condition is web page cannot be found. Parks and Rec took that from me. Parks and Rec stole from me.
Where's that music?
Parks and Rec stole from me. Okay, listen. I've always used fruit as an analogy for my brain. And I've always used ripening and juices as an analogy for me learning things. So, you know, maybe it's a... Maybe it is. I'm guessing it is. So, you know, I don't want anything. I don't want any accolades. I don't want anything. All I want is
do the finger taps. I can only do this puppet. can only do that, Papas. So you can always find him, also find him, on Facebook, Andrew Black. Andrew Black on Facebook. Rorschach 7 on YouTube. And I can't remember what it is on Twitter. It's probably Rorschach, or it could be Andrew Black. I'm going to cough again. I'm going to my sarcophagus. Now, I don't turn away to spare you, but I've got a coughing bucket over here. I always cough in it. Never have to empty it. Amazon.com. Coughing bucket. $7. It keeps your coughs forever. So you don't have any problems disposing of them. It just takes care of it. That's the end of the show. No, it's not. So since I'm woefully unprepared and I'm full of coughing, luckily have my bucket. If anyone's out there and would like to call, good Lord, I'll have to do something about this. Try the smoke song again. Don't think it'll work. Because what I really need is a coughing fit. You know, a coughing fit. Get over it. Get beyond it. It's like the long jump of coughing, a pole vault. It's a big, huge jalopy of an effort, and then you're all done with it. But I can't just sit here and go cough in the cough bucket every minute or so. Troubling. Troubling. What should we do? Here, you listen to this just for a moment while I cough. It'll just be 20 seconds of this for you and for me. Terribly violent coughing.
Seven is 27, is 27, is 48, is 44.
Doesn't seem like I did anything, does it? It's the magic of whatever this format is. Video, audio, radio, ghost. All right, so anyone wants to call, call. Otherwise we're going to go to Ryan, Riz, Davies, Scorpio Jones, shortly, if he's on. I'll just check the Skype. If you're not prepared, Ryan, you can just let it ring. I haven't done anything yet. There we go. Ryan.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Very good, how are you doing? I hear myself coming out of your fireplace in the background.
I've turned that off.
All right. So, yeah, I told you we might do it at 10 o'clock, but then the enormous video failed to become itself, and here we are. I hope that's all right with you.
That's fine. It's either talk to you or scream at the TV, so I think this is more productive.
What would you scream at the TV?
Oh, I always talk to the TV. I disagree with a lot of the programming, and I yell at characters and, you know, things like that.
Do you have a video camera? I know you have a video. You should film that for us.
Okay.
Just turn it on will. And then go have some dinner and then come back and watch a show. And then we can all delight. And seeing what you say.
Oh, sure. You want to watch My Insanity? That's no problem.
Yes, we do. That would be very good. So what was the last thing that you remember yelling at the television?
That would probably have to be at Terra Nova.
All right. I saw the recent edition, the memory show, where a virus of some kind was infecting all their brains and they couldn't remember their recent lives or events, but then they could remember some particular moment They were launched back into their own personal histories. So one person remembered their college days. Somebody else was in the war. And then they would go into a catatonic state and die.
Right. Now, for anybody that's not familiar with Terra Nova, just a brief show premise. It's set in this bleak dystopian future where mankind has all but depleted Earth's natural resources. And luckily, a scientist discovers a rift in the space-time continuum, and he builds a one-way portal 85 million years into the past of an alternative Earth to build this bright and shiny new society for the human race called Terra Nova. And it's a place that... Yes, or Terra Novica, as you put last week. The only problem with Terra Nova is the fact that it's inhabited with dinosaurs. And we follow the exploits of one family, the Shannons. And I really don't remember their names, so if I refer to them, it'll be husband, wife, son, smart daughter, and younger daughter.
I was trying to remember that point in the show where the wife had written down all the names so she wouldn't forget them.
Right.
I planned on using that myself as a mnemonic trick. So as I watched him reading them off, I thought, oh, I'll remember now. Zoe, Rick, Josh, the other one. I don't know what the husband's name is. Stephen Lang, I call him.
Actually, no, Stephen Lang is the other guy. He's the leader of the Peacekeepers.
Oh, okay. He's the one from Avatar.
Yes.
Oh, that's Stephen Lang. Who's the husband? Mm-hmm. What's his name?
I think his name is O'Mara, Jason O'Mara, or something like that.
Oh, all right.
You're absolutely right. This episode deals with Alzheimer's, just like Deep Blue Sea and the recent rise of the Planet of the Apes. It addresses something that they introduced in the previous episode where the wife encounters her college boyfriend who arranged for her to travel back in time to be with him because he was under the impression that the husband was still in prison.
Right. So he'd have her all to himself.
Right. There'd be 85 million years that would separate her from her husband, so he figured he'd have a clear shot at worming his way back into her heart.
Mm.
So this episode wasn't half bad, but it's still a long way off from being good. But the trick to liking the show is you have to abandon all preconceived notions of what science fiction is because you're just not going to get it here.
Right.
This show, it's like fluff science fiction or science fluffshin. You're not going to be dazzled by either the science or the fiction here. But the one thing that the writers do well is plot devices. They learn their craft from Plot Device 101 because as the show begins, they hand you four or five plot devices that you know will be utilized by the end of the show.
Hmm. Like that rooty thing that he had to eat for his sickness.
Right.
They later became sort of a red herring, but then a clue to what the actual problem was.
Right, to the cold that he caught from his daughter, that was the real cure. Also, his wife left her ring behind in the lab doing some sciencey thing, so he had to retrieve the ring, and of course that plays heavily into the events near the end. But also, conveniently, her memory regresses. When she gets there's a research facility that is working on this cure for Alzheimer's. So that facility loses contact with the main colony. So a search party goes out, and it's Stephen Lang, the wife, and some unnamed soldier that you know is slated to die.
Hmm.
And they take one of the two vehicles that are available. And they drive out to this place, and of course, when they get there, they're exposed to some disease that causes them to lose their short-term memories. And of course, she regresses back to her college days, so that when the husband shows up with the college boyfriend, they're a couple again. So, you know.
Very upsetting. Very upsetting.
So, I didn't hate the episode because it addressed a lot of things that I hope that they'll just put to bed. That whole love triangle thing, they need to squash between the husband, the college boyfriend, and the wife.
Right.
They also addressed the son kind of has feelings for the little adventurous girl in the colony. Yes. But he has a girlfriend 85 million years in the future that he promised he would try to work out a way to actually get her to Terra Nova. So they address their feelings and they kind of just laid all the cards out on the table, and that's and that's good.
Well, so what do you think? What was something that you yelled at the television about during this show, if you can remember? What most rankled you?
Okay. You have supposedly two of the smartest minds as a part of your science and medical team. They're both there present at the station where people are losing their short-term memory, and the husband isn't affected at all. Both people know that he has a cold. One of them know that he's munching on the Robitussin root or whatever it was.
Right.
And neither one of them clued into the fact that, hey, maybe it's your cold. It was something that they conveniently overlooked for me.
So you don't like those things where they take a long time to actually figure out what you've already figured out?
Well, especially since, and if the writers had done a better job at maybe hiding that, but it's all out in the open, it's all up front, and everything's laid out. So I was kind of mad because when you see supposedly intelligent characters not having a clue, it makes me yell at the TV.
Hmm. Well, I found the episode, maybe it feels like a flatline show to me. Not meaning that it's going to be cancelled, but that we at this point sort of know the levels of excitement and the depth of character that we're going to be given unless things remarkably change. So, to me, it seems like a regular program where a little something happens. It's very dramatic, but it's going to turn out all right. And for that reason, it becomes to me very discardable. But I think that the main problem really is the stories are fine. I think they could keep the same stories, but the characters are just too weak. The Stephen Lang character from Avatar, he should be more like the Avatar fellow. They sort of wanted him to be, but then they warmed him up a little bit, so you can't quite tell if he's good or bad. But he should be more vigorously awful or evil or strident or something. He's a strong character, but he doesn't seem to have a position in some ways, or his agenda is too hidden from us. And then the husband, who's not Stephen Lang, or Mira, or Dare, or whatever his name is, those two should be at loggerheads. Stephen Lang should actively despise the husband and keep him down, very far down. They shouldn't be at this point friendly or chums. There's no dynamic happening with any of the characters except for these sixes are bad over there, and we know something's going to happen. But if they intensified that relationship, they would have figured out who the husband actually is. But now we just sort of have a person who's then the person of the husband. He's a kindly, well-meaning sort of hero without a mission, but he's very plain. And he has moments where he's warm, and that's nice, but he's still not strong enough. No, none of the characters are strong enough.
That was my problem with the show, because in the first episode, the family just acclimates to this prehistoric world and society too quickly. I mean, they fit in instantly. And you're absolutely right, because the husband, who was a strong-headed, bullish character in the future, should be that here. And he should be at loggerheads with the Stephen Lang character. But they didn't want to do that, so they introduced this college boyfriend to make him an obvious rival. And that character just isn't strong enough to go head-to-head with the husband.
No, he's just a wormtail kind of a character. He's nice enough in a sort of way. That's another thing. He's kind of smarmy. and isn't helpful, but then he's taking crumbs off your plate. And that can't lead to great drama. So it is irritating, but to me it feels like they love that part, and they're going to do that every week, a new angle on the old boyfriend ogling the wife and trying to figure out how he can get the husband to fall off a cliff, or, you know, or himself suffer from this memory thing.
Well, if they took chances, which the show probably will never do, I mean, it's a safe show. It's definitely a family show. You sit down, you watch people run from dinosaurs and solve simple problems. There's potential here. If they started tackling some of the mystery,
right,
from the pilot episode, but I don't think it's going to do that. And one of the reasons that I liked this episode better than the one before is because I was afraid this show was going to become Monster of the Week. So right. here's a new dinosaur, we have to watch out. And they did introduce a new dinosaur, the little Nickelsaurus or whatever they called it, the thing that's attracted to the nickel and the power cables.
Yeah, well, I am too, so I understood that. I went right for that on the screen. So just chewing up the nickel smoke. Delicious. So all dinosaurs love nickel smoke.
Apparently.
It's very sweet. It's like syrup in the air. You just open your mouth and it sort of puffs up and you're just, oh, this is delicious. Cotton candy.
Okay.
Nickelsaurus. So we're still with that. We'll keep watching it. It's not very sparkly, but it's one of those very broad things. It's so broad in a way that you permit it. You allow it to be sort of bland in the middle because it has this extreme of size and that it's very far in the past. The structure of it is interesting enough. But
right. It's very safe. It's a very safe show.
One thing I keep wishing, and it's I think it points indirectly to the problem of the show. Unlike Lost, in the show Lost, I always wanted the people to stay on the island, or I was content with them being on the island. I didn't really want them to leave because I didn't want to escape that fantasy place. But in Terra Nova, I have this desire that they all go back to the future and have many episodes there so we can see that world, because that world was almost more interesting than this familiar dinosaur Jurassic Park world.
Well, it would be great if they could actually introduce elements of Terra Nova into the future, where not necessarily a dinosaur is roaming through, you know, the future, but if even though this is an alternate dimension Earth, introducing something from that dimension into, you know, the regular dimension might cause a shift in the space-time continuum. I don't know. Something else than, okay, this week, what is it?
Right. You know,
what monster, what little silly thing? Is there another disease? Are the Sixers going to try to infiltrate the camp again? You know.
Right. Yes, we'll see. I think if it continues in the same exact fashion and we don't get much of the mythography built up, about, I'm interested in the missing son, you know, the boy that scribbled on the rocks. And
right.
They didn't give us any of that. I don't care about the Sixers at all. They just seem like the Mad Max rejects. And they don't have any, they're not interesting. They're just, you know, they have this tattoos and funny hair and they look sweaty. But the characters aren't themselves very compelling. We don't know what they want. They just seem sort of vaguely violent. They want some things, but it's not a big deal, and they're dramatic in their delivery. I never find that believable. So let's go on to the other one, Pan Am. I didn't see the new episode, but I saw that you posted it. You liked it, and this episode deals more with the Colette character, who we both agree is a standout Pan Am stewardess.
What's great about this episode, and don't get me wrong, the Pan Am series itself is still light and airy. Mm-hmm. I doubt that you'll ever get anything hard-hitting or disturbing. It's all going to be kind of love boatish in the air.
Right.
But this episode, you find out the flight is going to Berlin, And for some reason, even though Colette is a senior stewardess, she's never, ever caught a flight to Berlin. And she looks a little nervous about actually going. And you come to find out that that she lost her parents when the Nazis occupied Paris. So she harbors a deep resentment to Germans. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want to go to Berlin because then she has to confront her past. And the other story is Christina Ricci's character is keen to meet JFK, who's there to make his speech. So she goes through all of these little games, trying to weasel her way into a press conference. She buddies up with two reporters that happen to be on the flight, one from the Village Voice, the other one for the New York Examiner. So the other girls get to run around with her. The spy stewardess actually is on a mission to retrieve a book. And the person that's handing the book off to her, a German girl who's also a courier, gets discovered. So she needs sanctuary. So the spy stewardess actually tries to make a connection with her contact, and they're having none of it. So she hatches her own plan to save this girl's life, which was kind of interesting. But Colette was the definite standout in this because all the stewardesses go to this function that JFK is supposed to be at, and they show up in their full Pan Am regalia because every party needs sexy women. So they're able to get in on that. And of course, Colette comes face to face with a German official, and she can't help but voice her resentment. And as an apology, she starts singing the German national anthem. And it was kind of reminiscent of Casablanca, but she pulled it off very well. But it doesn't go any deeper than that, and that was my problem with it. There's a lot there to explore, and I was hoping they would go deeper, and they didn't, because it's one of those shows.
Right.
It's all surface.
It's every time I think of the show, I think of that "Fly Me to the Moon" song. It just has that soft. It's a little wander through a story. It's like a book that you're partially reading and then kind of looking up from. It doesn't matter what's happening really. You can pick it up anywhere.
Right.
Right. Now, as we think, I'm always interested in when they bring a Kennedy into their show. Do they have some fake John F. Kennedy, or do they just show him from the back or the side, or you hear his voice?
They try to be clever about it. Christina Ricci is not able to meet up with JFK at any of the points that he's at. So she misses the return flight home because she's trying to bribe her way onto Air Force One to meet him, to shake his hand. But she's open about it. It's like, she lies and says that she's a member of the press. She gets a press pass from the Village Voice guy. And she also gets a box of Cubans. And she's trying to get past Secret Service, and she has the Cubans. So the Secret Service agent takes the Cubans and gives them to JFK as he's walking on board the plane. And because it's night and the only light coming from the plane is from inside the plane, he's backlit. So all you see is his silhouette.
Oh, yes.
He holds up the box of cigars and he waves to her.
All right, I'll take it. I want to do a collection of fake John F. Kennedys in the movies, a whole book about it, how they manage it. I'm going to include that photo of his silhouette. This is how to do it. It could be a chapter in a book on filmmaking. Say you need to make a film about JFK. How do you do it? So I haven't really watched. I haven't watched much television this week, and I was busy doing some other things, which is partially why I'm so unprepared. But I did watch House. I don't know if you watch that show.
Yes, I do.
And I don't. I'm sort of a casual Housey. I don't watch it very often. Just every once in a while turn around and see where he's at. See if he's with that cuddy woman, what the state of his relationships are with Wilson and who his doctor team might be. But one thing that I find remarkable about the show is its capacity to reinvent itself, and it, I think, successfully did it again by sticking House in prison. It's laughable on the outside when you think about it, as he's been in insane asylums and he's been killed a few times or whatever. But in any actual practice, it works that he's thrown in this prison. Has this, I don't know, perhaps it speaks to the notion of the power of a show that just has one character as its major figure. He's so central to the show. He could do anything he likes. He could get on a plane and go live on an island and you're still watching House. He could do anything and it would still work, and they do tap that and use it quite well. So what are you thinking of the House? And now, you could, after I've said all these nice things, you can say whatever you like, even if the opposite.
Okay, with House, just to bring you up to date, Cuddy's no longer on the show. Last season, House actually is in a relationship with Cuddy, and it's an on-again, off-again relationship because he can't stop being House. So he sabotages the relationship. They can't separate their personal relationship from the business one. And eventually, she breaks up with him, and in a fit of anger, while she's having a party, so it's Cuddy, Wilson, and I guess family and friends, House takes his car and drives it into their living room.
Good work, House. Good. Another good one.
And he flies to some remote island to avoid. But then he comes back, and he represents himself in court, and he didn't really fight it, so he's doing his own penance. So he allows them to jail him and blah, blah, blah. So that's the episode that you caught. And this week's episode, I can't remember.
There was a little Chinese or Korean assistant, right?
Yes. I can't remember the name of the Foreman. Foreman actually bails him out because Foreman is the new Cuddy.
Right.
So he gets Cuddy's job, and he's got the responsibility of reeling House in. And you know that's not going to last very long. And you know that the woman in the prison scene, who was the prison doctor who gets fired, is going to become a member of the House team.
Oh, yes, I thought she would.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's interesting. I don't know, Foreman as a character, when I first started watching House, I liked him a lot because he seemed like a junior House without the smarts. He's intelligent, but he doesn't have that extra thing that House has.
No, I don't know why he even continues doing the show. He seems unhappy having to be the Foreman character all the time because it's such dull work. He's just always carrying around heavy bags and having to smirk at House and try to put him in his place, and it doesn't work, and always just being the second, not even, just way down below. I don't know. I always feel bad for him. Just go find a new show. You don't have to do this Foreman character anymore.
So there are episodes in House that really work for me. My favorite episode, and you don't watch it regularly, so you probably won't know, but it begins with House sitting in the middle of a strip club getting a lap dance, and he has no idea how he got there. When he walks out of the strip club, there's an accident. A bus is overturned. There are police and bodies all over the place and ambulances and whatever. And he's trying to piece together the memory of what happened, but his mind is so wrapped up in solving clues that it won't just tell him what happens. He has to figure out by piecing together clues.
Right.
And it was a pretty good episode, but that's like, I don't know, 3 or 4 seasons ago.
I did see that. Was he in that bus accident? And then
yes, he was. And so was Wilson's girlfriend.
Right. And she dies.
Yes.
Right. So Connie's not on the show. She's officially not on the show.
Yes, she's left.
And what about Amber Tamblyn and all the other assistants?
I don't think they're on the show either. I think Taub and 13 are gone. So it's going to be Charlene Yee. And I think that Chase is still there. They can't get rid of him.
No. I actually liked Charlene Yee a lot. I only watched 10 minutes of that one, but just enough to get a sense of it. And I liked the idea of this. Just a very different character for him to have to deal with. And she was very charming in her way and who she is. And it seemed like a potent and sympathetic, antagonistic relationship that also had a touch of sweetness to it.
Well, the great thing is she's kind of mousy, but then she's got a bit of a bite too, and you never really know which one you're going to get. So I kind of like that.
Right. All right. Well, is there anything else in the world of television you want to talk about? I don't have enough shows that I'm watching to be able to give you good questions.
The second episode of Homeland is still as good as the first. Basically, for that show, there is a prisoner of war that an extraction team rescues from Iraq, and he's brought back as a war hero. At the same time, a CIA agent uncovers intel that the Iraqis have turned a prisoner of war, and of course, she thinks it's our guy, the guy that that's recently recovered. Mm-hmm. You find out in this episode, she's also insane, but she's hiding her illness from the CIA because they take her off active duty.
She's insane? What sort of insane? Like depressive or just schizophrenic or... Do we not know yet?
She's suffering from... apparently she had intel about an event that happened 10 years ago that we assume is 9/11, that either she didn't act on in time or she didn't act on effectively enough. So she's carrying the guilt of 9/11 that's done something to her mentally, and she's determined not to let another... terrorist attack happened on American soil. So she's really dead set on catching this guy and stopping him from completing his mission.
And now, is that show, it's on Showtime, anywhere else? Is it online? Or?
If you dig deep enough, you can find it. It is available certain places. It's not available to view on Showtime, though.
So it's not a regular show that I could see. It's a torrent or something.
Yes.
All right. So Homeland, anything else?
The last time you mentioned The Hour.
Yes.
And I was absolutely wrong. It is playing here on BBC America. I've seen the entire first season. It's only 6 episodes. It's a brilliant, brilliant show.
Oh, did you see that in the last week?
Yes, I did. I watched all 6 episodes.
Wow. And now how did you go on BBC America and then find it and tape it all?
No. Like I said, the internet's a big place.
Ryan Scorpio Reese, illegal downloader. Thank you for joining me. You're getting a call shortly from the authorities. No, of course not. I think they'd be happy to have any... I think anyone wants you to download that. That's my thing. Music, they don't want you to, but I think television shows, the more downloads they get, the happier they are. I think they count them proudly. They have people on the staff saying, 2 million live viewers, 4 million 7 days afterwards on the DVR, and then we have 1.4 million on BitTorrent. And they pile it all together, and they use that as their thing. And they're proud of it. They're happy. They're happy. They want it to be big. So you did an excellent job. Good work.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for outing me. I appreciate that.
Oh, I didn't. I did. That's all right.
So with The Hour, basically, it's set in the early 50s, and it's about this hour-long... current affairs TV magazine show that mirrors broadcast news to a great extent. Your lead character is a cocky producer that wants to actually take control of the show. He's in love with his best friend, who's also a producer, who doesn't return his affections because she's in love with the TV presenter for the show. So there's this whole love triangle thing happening. But the show is great because it's filled with murders and Soviet spy intrigue and this mystery that needs to be resolved, all while Britain is going through the Suez Crisis. So it's a very, very interesting show. If I have one complaint about it, it's that the show has a tendency of calling the past to task for not living up to today's ideals of political correctness. Mm. A lot of shows are doing that now, and I just let the time period be the time period.
You mean so there's some sort of vaguely suggested presentation of guilt that we should feel bad about something?
Yes.
All right.
But it's a very good show. If you have the opportunity to see it, please give it a watch.
And by opportunity, you mean keys to the van. To a thief like Ryan. All right. Well, thank you so much for giving us a good sense of what's out there in the world, the stories and your thoughts. And don't forget, we'd like a video camera set up on your television, any kind, webcam, doesn't matter, just so we can see you lashing out, and then perhaps weeping, falling in love with Colette. I'd like to see you, your facial expressions as Colette comes on the Pan Am, to see you get soft and sort of wispy and, oh, Colette, I'd love to see that. And then anger, back and forth, anger and then weepy about Colette, writing her notes. Dear Colette, I don't know your real name, and I know that it's not the past, but you were very good at that episode, I thought. You're the whole reason the show is doing well, and Christina Ricci is terrible. That's all. Thank you. Sorry. So I'm making things up, of course. All right, Ryan, thank you so much. Maybe we'll talk to you next week. I'll try to watch one of these shows, try to watch The Hour. I want to call it The Hours. And I'll probably watch another House and X Factor and any other. I'll try to watch that Homeland if I can find someone who'll thieve it for me. then I'll be up to date with all the good shows. Person of Interest, right. I didn't watch that, and I don't care.
Oh, one and done. I'm done with that show.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Ryan. Scorpio Reese, Reese Scorpio Ryan. Sorry.
Jones.
All right.
Well, it was a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Next week, you have to tell me a clip to play, some YouTube clip or something, so we can show some people some of your work.
Oh, sure, definitely. I forgot this week. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. It's all right. Okay, thanks so much. We'll move on. Next week, more TV talk with the master thief, Ryan Scorpio Reese. I think I hung up on them. Just so I could get a break, I'm going to play this little bit that should have preceded our talk, called The Boring Horror. Because when I first brought up the concept of Ryan talking about television with me, he said it would be boring and it would be a horror, and I wouldn't want to do it. And I said, yes, let's do it, but we'll call it The Boring Horror, and before we start, I'll play something so terrible that we'll be in a very low place, and then we can have a call, and no matter what quality the call is and how terrible it is and how boring, it won't be as boring or as terrible or horrible as what preceded. So now I'm playing it afterwards. I don't know what that means. But I do need a break, even though this is like a minute-long break.
Hello, hello, hello. Is there anybody in there? Just not if you hear me. really want it home. Come on down.
Relax. I like when people try to make their own echoes. It's a good sign. Making your own echoes. I don't think you could tell, but I was doing that myself manually. Voice manually. Making my own echoes. It's one of those radio tricks you pick up from being in the business as long as I have. Sometimes you need echo. You don't have it. You don't have a magic box you can press that says echo on it. You punch it. All of a sudden you have all the echo you want. As many as you like. Dozens of echoes. Candy-coated echoes. Painted up in different colours. Sometimes you have to do it yourself. I know, it seems like I'm using the echo box, but I'm not. All right, so anyone else out there wants to call? Radio ghosting. I think that's it, isn't it? Radio ghosting. I don't know what it is. Radio ghost. Ghosting. Feel free to call. If not, that's fine. Keep on going, but right now I'm sort of waiting. That's how I wait. I think it'd be good. A good thing to do for everyone tomorrow is to discover how you like to wait. We have a call from Christopher. Christopher.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Very good.
How are you in New York yet? Oh, you're in New York, but I mean, are you in the place that you want to be in New York?
Not quite yet. I get on a plane at about five in the morning on Friday and head out. So we'll see how this week goes.
What's the plan for when you arrive? More real estate agents who won't show up?
Exactly. I'm gonna ride the subway over, and Jess goes to work at about. She has to be there for 10, so I'm gonna catch up on a little sleep and then meet her after work, and we're gonna. Head out and actually meet a real estate agent this weekend, live in the flesh.
You think it's real this time? You believe in this?
It's got to be real. I'm feeling good about this one.
Now, how did you talk to them and say, you know what, we've had 6 real estate agents ditch us. They never showed up. Will you do that? Or what did you, how are you so certain that she's going to come, or he?
Well, I have to feel good about this one.
So you have no evidence or reason to, you just do.
I just have to go with my gut feeling. This one has to be good because...
very good.
We contacted them about a listing they had, and as anything nice in New York City, it went within a day of us contacting them. So this agent actually went out of the way to say, I'll show you some other properties. So so hopefully that works out.
That does seem sort of... implicitly to have some potential, something that they wouldn't have otherwise offered. Why don't you come by and have, I want to give you some donuts. Sounds like a strange extra comment that they don't need to say unless they have some level of need or seriousness. So that's good. So what else do you do down there in New York?
Not too much this weekend. Just gonna apartment hunt and just get some well-needed hangout time in.
Right.
You know? Walk around, maybe. Actually, walk everywhere there, so definitely walk around.
That's very nice. And is the city itself a place that you're familiar with from your younger days, or is it still new as you go down there? Is it the big, wild city that you still can't get your mind around?
Well, she was she went out in about June for an internship, and they ended up hiring her, but all throughout the summer, I would come out on the weekends and I would visit and we'd walk around, check everything out. So I'm familiar with a little bit of it, some areas and parks and streets, but it's still pretty much uncharted and unexplored for me.
Oh, that's nice, though. It's such a, it's like a whole, it's like flying off to some new planet, and then you get to explore it, and you could spend the rest of your life trying to figure out what it actually feels like, all of it all together, to get the whole thing in the palm of your hand. It can't be dull, I don't think.
It is. It's a different creature. It's a different beast than what I'm in right now. You know, and it's intriguing and interesting to me because everywhere and anywhere you go, there's something happening all the time. It's just go, 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 and you see so many different things slammed into one small area, and it's just a, I don't know if it's a culture soup, I guess we would call it.
Well, they used to call it that, culture soup. You'd say, yeah. We're going this weekend. I'll go to culture soup.
I'm going to culture soup.
But then it stopped. Called it the Big Apple, where you see the root of it was culture soup.
Yeah, Big Apple. I like culture soup. I think that's a good one, you know?
Yeah. But, so and next week you'll have something. You apologize for not submitting anything. You don't need to apologize.
You know what? I felt bad. I feel like this today crept up on me. It came quick, and in between then and now I hadn't heard anything or stumbled upon anything that really just struck me.
Oh, that's how it should be. It should be something that strikes you. So you shouldn't have to actually work at it or think, oh, I have to find something. You should just be walking around and then it should somewhat slap you in the face.
Exactly.
That's fine. So when that happens, that would be very nice.
And I told Jess for a minute that I almost was going to retire, you know, the grabbing the audio for a while, because I felt like I fell out of the mindset of having to stumble upon it and more of looking for it.
Right.
And I told her it started to feel kind of odd and forced and it just wasn't the same. You know, and she told me, don't give it up. And I guess that 1 week off was good for me because it put me right back into the spot where I had originally started with the mindset of stumble upon.
Right. I think there's a way where you get to both. You kind of have to, you fall in love with it in the stumbling area, and then when you notice that you like it and that you're getting good things, then you actively pursue. And then you realize you're losing pleasure in that pursuit, and then you sort of back off a bit. And then you kind of go back with both of those things. You're looking for something, but not in a terribly active way. It's only that you're listening, perhaps in a slightly stronger way, and things you'll have a thought, well, maybe this would be good, or maybe that will happen more, but you don't force it. I think you'll find that balance that comes along. I think with all the photography and anything like that, it comes along.
Yeah, I take photos a lot, but what I do is I try to do it a little different. I use my cell phone that has a surprisingly good camera on it for the purpose that I'm using it for. And I try to document in a loose way places I've been, things I've seen, but I never look for the photo. It feels like a tidal wave. When it hits you and you know it and you see it, it's almost extra mental thing that sweeps you, and you just know that you have to take that minute in time and you have to preserve it.
That's a very good way to put it. I think a lot of people know what you mean there.
You know, it just is. I guess that's the only way you could place it as. It just is. You know, it's right. And right. It feels right. But I've always tried to keep that thought that you can't chase, you know, you can't chase something. You just need to find it. It needs to find you.
Right. So don't think of this as anything, any force, no force. It's only when, think of it, it comes to you first and then it comes over here, but there's no, you go find it and then bring it here. It's more, it's a part of your organic experience where the tidal wave of the photo and then the sound wave of the, whatever the event, like the violist or whatever that person was, just suddenly being there and it's perfectly clear. It's time to record.
And I don't know if the word is uncanny, but it's just, it's interesting how that 1 minute, everything in the world just kind of just sinks and falls into itself and goes. Like with the person in the subway playing the instrument, I mean, I walk down the steps, you know, you're walking into the subway, it's dirty, it's hot, it's loud. And I went around the corner and I heard that person playing. And I thought to myself, wow, that sound is how I feel right now. And it's almost some sort of, it's like a show when they stage a song to a scene or a theme, you know, how it just, it works.
Right.
And it just, it's interesting to me.
Right, that doesn't happen often, but I know what you mean. It's almost like some sort of cinematographer, a sound scorer is in the background arranging the tonalities around you that perfectly match your mood. And so the strange thing is that you tend to stop within it and you don't continue onward. It's almost as though the actor in the film suddenly heard the dramatic rising music as he raised up his sword and then thought, well, this beautiful music going with my sword. Then you just stop and listen, and then, of course, you're beheaded by the three-headed sloth that you should have killed. All right, Chris. So next week, perhaps, but no forcing, all right?
Yes. All right. I got a good feeling about this one, so...
And good luck. Good luck in the...
All right, thank you so much.
Okay, Chris. Good night.
Good night.
Christopher Budd. Every week is, except for this week, and I'm terribly disappointed. Oh, am I disappointed in that Christopher Budd? He said he would give me some audio, and then, the last moment, nothing. Nothing. Sent him emails, sent him other things, pushed things in his direction, dropped cups while thinking about him. What was that noise? I think someone's calling, but I don't have any proof of it. Oh, I see. Instead of hanging up on Chris, I put him on hold. That's what that noise was. It's the hold music from Skype. So I was just kidding about that, Chris. No problem, but you better have something next week. I don't know what I'll do. All right, is anyone else? I am so without that I can't even finish that phrase. It only just goes like this. I don't have any. There's not even a word to put that, it's just blank. That's something I think people feel that way sometimes. They can't put a name on it. I don't have any. What? Usually when you don't have that thing, you can't say what it is. It's a lack beyond lacking. For example, perhaps most of your life you're walking around with a bag full of your things. Your emotions, your psychological state, candy. And then, someday, all you have is the bag. It doesn't feel that good. You wonder where all your things are. You look in the bag, you could still feel the bag, and then there's a day when you don't even have that bag. It doesn't necessarily mean you're depressed. It just means you're adrift. And today I'm adrift. I have no real explanation. I'm not sad or down or depressed. Just time moved quickly. In space. Did something. Much different. I'm going to have to start doing my own echo again. Go back to that. All right, my friends, we'll say this is the end of Radio Ghost 8. Radio Ghost 8. That was like a bad echo. Echo that didn't work. I thank you for joining me next week. Oh, this will be tremendous. I've stumbled upon the diaries of Harry Potter. And I have a good explanation for how I've done that. But Here are some of Harry's own thoughts, in his own words, from his own diary. And I'll tell you how it was that I came upon this little tome, and all I can say is that it's not something to be missed. Harry Potter's diary next week. Also, I meant to do the Christina San Antonio's bike ride discussing her grandfather's third grade expulsion via the axe and the blood and the toes, but I did something terrible with the audio and then lost it. And it's a saga of, again, going back to the not even having a bag type of experience from which I could not recover. It was the blue screen of self, which we all sometimes have. This is, you're seeing me at my blue screeniest. I don't mind. I'm not upset. I'm just saying, telling you. It's not an excuse. Just an agreement to say, yes, I know, there's not much here. So thank you, my friends, for joining me. Thank you, Rorschach7, Andrew Black on Facebook. Thank you, Ryan, Reese Scorpio. Is there anyone else to thank? Jeb Callers, for not dying. Don't fly so close to those balloons. I was more worried about the balloons than the grass. What else was there? That's it. It's the end already. It's the end of the story. Next week maybe I'll play something, some of the frog and toad things that I did also. For some reason, it's one of the most popular things on my website. It's terrible, frog and toad things. That's how it works on the internet. The most awful thing you've ever created is the thing that's most wanted. There's people coming, listen to my frog and toad waiting for Godot story. Well, why? I'm not pushing it out there. Why are you listening to it? And all I can think is it's children. Children who are reading the frog and toad books are searching for frog and toad and other things that go with it. And they end up at my site listening to this terrible violation of the world of frog and toad because I said it to the world of Waiting for Godot, frog and toad. I don't remember what I even called it, Waiting for Godot, and I did the voices and wrote a story about it. All these little children listening to, experiencing the world of Waiting for Godot in the spirit of frog and toad. It's not right. And who can I blame? Can I blame them? Little 7-year-old boys and girls who like stories about frogs and toads eating cookies on the river. And all of a sudden, the bleak thing that I've provided. All right. Thank you for joining me next week, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hopefully I'll be prepared. Hopefully I'll at least have a bag with something in it instead of being bagless, as I am. And I still don't have my pants on. It's too quick. It's because it takes me 7.5 minutes to get my pants on. You'll see. Someday when you're older, you'll see. You'll see. Pants. What a process. It's like excavating a sewer pipe hole. All these maneuvers. There's thousands of steps to putting on your pants. You don't realize it till you're old and can't bend and everything hurts. All right. See you next time. Thank you for joining, watching, listening, being. I send you my regards. Always merry and bright.